rural and suburban graduation rate for students, and what does that tell you?
Okay, so when we look at the data across the United States, we find that even when you control for and adjust for household income, you find that kids who grow up and graduate from rural communities in the United States are less likely to graduate from college compared to kids of the same ethnicity and household income in a suburban neighborhood. So why is that? You look at a family in Matomida or Stillwater, Minnesota, and household income of $40,000 a year. Those kids are much more likely to go to university and graduate from university than kids from a very similar household, same family composition, same ethnicity or race, but they're in a more remote or rural area. I have spent a lot of time trying to understand that and in my visits to rural communities in North Dakota and rural Alaska, New Mexico, and I think I've got a handle on some pieces of this puzzle. So here's one part of the answer. Most public schools in the United States preach what I call the middle class script. The middle class script reads as follows. Work hard in school so you can go to good college. Work hard at college, get a good job, and you'll have a good life. And this is the doctrine that is preached in middle school and high school in many, many, indeed in most public schools across the United States. And it seems perfectly reasonable to many people in education. But how does that sound if you are a student growing up in a rural community? Work hard at school so you can go to college. Work hard at college so you can get a good job and move away and never come back except to visit. And the result is that a lot of kids, especially boys, begin to perceive working hard in school so you can go to university, so you can move away and never come back, as being disloyal to their friends and to their community. And so some boys, not all, not most, but some, will disengage and not work hard as a way of proving their loyalty to their community. Likewise, you find girls who get pregnant at 14, 15, 16 years of age for a variety of reasons, but one part of that is a way of showing loyalty to this community. I'm not moving away. I'm going to raise my baby here. I have no interest in going to the University of Minnesota to earn a degree in industrial systems engineering. And I think a lot of administrators, especially those who didn't grow up in rural neighborhoods, don't get this. Well, there are several problems with that gospel, one of that which is that it is not true. Work hard so you can get into good school. Work hard at college so you can get a good job. I don't think so. I can tell you many people, many young people I know who played by this script and worked hard and went to a good college, and he's waiting tables 5 years out. So there's a lot of problems with this gospel, one of which is that it's not true. The other of which is that it disengages kids who don't see themselves as scholars, and you begin to get this kind of self-imposed segregation in the school, not based on race, but based on the extent to which kids have bought into this gospel. So you've got the kids who want a ticket out, who see education as their ticket out. They don't want to come back to Cook County. But those kids who are loyal to the community begin to see academic achievement as not only disconnected from, but antithetical to their loyalty to their community.
What role do parents play in passing that attitude on or not?
Well, you know, parents vary. A lot of parents, especially fathers, have a very mixed attitude about school because they may not have had a great school experience themselves, whether they are successful in terms of income or not, they may feel that their success has nothing to do with how well they did in trigonometry in high school. So they may feel that school, I have met men who are very successful commercially, but who think high school is a stupid waste of time because they don't see any use for trigonometry or English poetry in their in their work. And many men have told me everything they really need to know. They didn't learn in school.
The whole issue of social media, video games, all of these kinds of electronic wonders that assail young people as well as older ones. What role does that play in the growth and development of young men and women?
Well, it's such an interesting question because it's all so new. We didn't have this when we were growing up, we who are parents now. Facebook did not exist 10 years ago. So parents aren't sure what parents should do because, you know, we don't have any reference from our own childhood or adolescence. And there's some really interesting research that's come out really just in the last 2 years. So, for example, Mike Stefanone, professor at the University of Buffalo, New York, but looking nationwide in the United States, finds the more time a girl spends on Facebook, the more likely she is to become depressed. But that's not true for boys. It's only true for girls. Why is that? Well, he looks, for example, at how many photos teenagers put on their Facebook page. Boys and girls both put photos on their Facebook page. Who puts more photos on? Well, it turns out girls put more photos on. How many more? 80% more? No, it's 500% more. Girls post five times as many photos on their Facebook page as boys do, and the photos are different. So a girl and boy go to a football game, and they take pictures and post it on their Facebook page. The boy might take a picture of the game or the pretty cheerleader at the game. The girl is turning the camera on herself. She's turning her cell phone on herself and taking a picture of herself at the game. Here I am at the game. We had a great time. Now, if you don't like Justin's photo of the pretty cheerleader, he's probably not going to be that upset. But if you don't like Emily's photo of Emily, she's much more likely to take it personally. But why is it that makes girls depressed? That doesn't really explain. That finding by itself doesn't explain it. And here's some recent research from Stanford. Girls, it turns out, tend to post only fun things when they're posting about themselves. They might post all kinds of bad things about teachers or rivals, but when a girl is posting about herself, she posts the fun stuff. Here I am at the football game. We had a great time. Here I am at the party. It was a blast. Here I am baking cookies. Don't they look yummy? Here I am with my new puppy. Isn't it cute? When the puppy dies a month later, girls don't put up a photo of the dead puppy. Now, boys do. A boy might very well put up a photo of the dead puppy, but girls don't. In fact, you look at that girl's page, you won't even know the puppy died. She doesn't mention it. Girls present themselves smiling. Now, this is the key insight from the Stanford research. Imagine your daughter's 14, 15, 16, 17 years of age, and she's sitting in her bedroom looking at everybody else's Facebook page. And there's Stephanie at the football game. She's having a great time. There's Melissa at the party. She's having a great time. And there's Sonia with her new puppy. Isn't it cute? I'm sitting here in my bedroom by myself not doing anything. My life sucks. The researchers at Stanford found that girls especially are very ready to believe that other girls are having more fun than they are. They don't know that, you know what, that girl's life is not profoundly different from yours. Every mature adult knows that. But this girl's not a mature adult. She's a teenage girl. She doesn't know that. She doesn't realize that the other girls are just pointing up the good stuff, the fun stuff. And the result is the more time a girl spends on Facebook, looking at everybody else's Facebook page and trying to pretend like she's having more fun than she really is, the more likely she is to become depressed. Why does this not apply to boys? Well, it turns out that boys, on average, there are some exceptions, but the average boy is much less engaged with Facebook. He's not putting up pictures of himself. He's engaged, but he's engaged. He's firing photon torpedoes at the enemy, okay? He's playing online video games with other boys. So it turns out that girls and boys engage online video games differently. They play video games. They play different video games, for starters. So the average girl playing Farmville spends between 15 and 20 minutes a session. The average boy playing Call of Duty online spends 2.5 hours playing Call of Duty online. So girls and boys are playing different games, and they're playing them differently. As one teenage boy said when I was talking to high school boys about online video games, and I referred to Call of Duty as a video game, he interrupted me. He said, excuse me, Call of Duty is not a game. It's a lifestyle. And it's much more important to him to be the first in his group to master all the missions in Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 than it is to get an A instead of a B in his Spanish test. That's of no consequence. In fact, getting an A instead of a B on your Spanish exam might actually lower your status in the eyes of boys in many American communities. Parents need to understand you've got to be involved. You cannot expect your daughter or your son at 13 or 14 or 15 years of age to break away from the pack. So, for example, with regard to texting, Nielsen Company, looking at teenagers across the United States, finds that girls text a lot more than boys do. The average girl now sends or receives more than 4,000 text messages a month. That's 135 a day. That's one every 7 minutes, every waking hour of every day, including school days. So what's your job as a parent? Well, it's real simple. At 9 o'clock at night, you take the phone away from your son or daughter, and you switch it off, and you put it in the charger, which stays in the parent's bedroom. The phone charger stays in the parent's bedroom, and she can have it back tomorrow morning. It is not reasonable to expect your 14-year-old daughter to take this responsibility. What is she supposed to say when her friend says to her tomorrow morning, her friend says, hey, I texted you last night at midnight. How come you didn't answer? It's not reasonable to expect your daughter to say, well, I thought it was more important for me to get a good night's sleep than to answer your text. That's not reasonable. You have to allow your daughter to say, my evil parents take my phone every night at 9. They won't let me have it back till the next morning. You've got to be the evil parents.